remember that, isn't it? But y'all, this is a big one, and I would say for a lot of us, if you're of the age to be thinking about it, I want to know if Social Security is going to be there for me. And I want to know, at what age should I take it out? Should I take it out at the right? Should I take it out early? Should I wait? I really want to know at what. And there is some strategy in that. So Social Security is coming here for that. And we had, it took me weeks to make that arrangement because there's but one representative in the area. So we got her coming. She's going to be coming. Medicare is coming. Blue Cross Blue Shield is coming. And they're going to do an hour and a half program together. They're going to go over Medicare. They're going to go over what the benefits are. Has there been changes in Medicare for this year, the Affordable Care Act? How will it impact us? It's not going to be political. We've asked them, nothing's political on this. It's just going to be, where is it in today? Not next year. How's it going to impact us today? And then we're going to go over Social Security, and then is it going to be something that I want to know how to outline it now? And then for Medicare, is there any changes for us? So you can kind of plan out the stuff. September the 11th, 12 to 1:30, we are providing lunch, but reservations are going to be required. So put it on your schedule. This is probably one of those things you really may, if you work, you may want to make an appointment to get off for an hour and a half. So it's going to be September the 11th, 12 to 1:30, and I would encourage you to put this one on the calendar, okay? So anyway, Miss Alice in the church office will take reservations, and she'll start taking them tomorrow. So anyway, that's 12 to 1:30, September the 11th. So we got some big programs, and in October we will be doing the vaccine clinic again in October. We've got a lot of other big programs coming up as well. So there's a sign-in sheet that's going to be going around.
I'm waiting on my daughter.
Okay. Well, we're going to be videoing this, so let's get you a chair so it'll be easy to come in and sit. Let's see, what would be an easy place for you to come in once she gets here? You're going to sit on that side of the room. Okay, let's find you a chair. Let's move these chairs up so you can come this side so it'll be easy on the video. So let's get one there.
Okay.
Okay. So let's go ahead and start.
I need one more. Once we get started, two things I ask. We're going to video this for our health library. What we do on our health programs, we put it in our library. So for those that didn't quite get all the notes, you want to check it out of our library. Also, it's going to be available on the webpage. So you can go to the Health and Wellness, to go to Dawson, go to the Health and Wellness webpage, and you can click on it. And in 2 or 3 weeks, you can look at this again for those that maybe go, now what did he say about, you can watch this. So I say that, so I want everybody to now get your phones out and go ahead and turn them off or mute them, because we don't want all of them ringing, because I know all of you are real popular, and they're going to be ringing during this time. So if you wouldn't mind, and I'm going to do the same, I'm going to go ahead and mute mine so it doesn't make any kind of racket during the program. So let's go ahead and all do the same. Now, this topic is one we've had a lot of conversations about at church. People have called me and said, can we get someone to come and speak about it? They've asked me questions about it, and I said, you know, I'm really don't have information on it. Actually, 15 or 20 years ago, y'all, hey, come on in. Now, you need to come on and get a seat now. Don't be standing there. Come on in.
There's some right there.
Come on in, yeah. I'm going to pull my purse out of that. Why, come on in. Are you
You need some help, Mike?
Okay, we'll get that. I'll go ahead why don't we go ahead and we'll talk a little bit about you.
Sure, go ahead.
And we'll talk about you.
Okay.
Okay. And anyway, we'll get the chairs out. So once we start videoing, but what we'll do is once we start the video going, we'll let it run, and we're going to ask that you hold the questions to the end. My guess is a lot of you are here that really have questions. You either have.
And I'm going to leave some time for questions.
So what we want to do is hold the questions to the end, because it's hard to hear a question, and probably on the video, the people that will hear the video are really not interested in your personal drama. You know, that drama is your drama. So, but it may help someone in the room.
Oh, I think it will. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It may help someone in the room. But, you know, when someone's listening to it, they're only going to hear the answer. They're going to hear what Dr. Pitts has to say. They won't hear the question unless he repeats it. So what I'd like to do is at the very end, we're going to say, thank you, we'll applaud, we'll end. And then we're going to do the questions. And when the questions are asked and answered, we're going to make sure everybody hears a question, everybody hears the answer. So if you ask a question, we're going to make sure everybody hears a question, everybody hears the answer. Because some of the questions we probably all have in here. And so we're going to make sure. But just for the video part, we want to make sure that, that you know, it's not on this part of the video. Okay? Is everybody got that? So that'll be good. Okay? Come on in. Have a seat. So... Glad you could come.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Come on in. Okay. So now, basically, Dr. Pitts is the founder of Pitts & Associates, and when I got him to come, basically, I wanted to make sure he didn't think I was stalking him. I did not know who to go to. I said, who's going to be an expert in the field? And then when I made a few calls, someone gave me your name, and so I tried to make a call, and I didn't. It's hard to get into you. So I said, well, I'll just go over there and wait. And so I went over there and sat in the office, and that's really kind of hard thing to do. So here I am sitting, waiting, and I guess they thought I was a patient. And so then I went, you know, to the window and started pecking and just waited till I was able to find, you know, at lunchtime, be able to get him to say, I'm not a patient, can I? Go to speak. And so finally, I was able to.
And you had
to
had me out here before a few years ago.
It's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been a while. So
you know, your family.
So, I asked him then, face to face, if he'd be willing to come to the church and to speak on this particular topic. Because there had been an interest from church members that had family, children, grandchildren, people that babysit. We've had Sunday school teachers that have come and said, you know, sometimes just one or two in class can take up the attention of the entire class. And they really want to take better care, both for their class members, for their children, for their grandchildren. They want to do the best they can. And sometimes they just don't know the best thing to do. A medication or not, therapy or not, which doctor to go to or not. They don't know the right answer. So I said, well, let me call and see who would be recommended. And the name always came back to you.
Thank you.
So with that, I called, and I was so happy that you would take the time and be willing to come.
Sure.
But he quickly said yes to come. So really, with great recommendation, Dr. Pitts came tonight. And then members of our church also said highly recommended. So I'm glad that he's going to take the time to spend tonight with us to give us first a talk and then to be able to really give us, I guess, all of us a little bit of therapy afterwards with questions and answers.
Yeah.
So let's first hear his words of wisdom and then let him spend some time sharing with us, and then we will spend time allowing each other to ask questions, okay? So with that, let's give a warm Dawson welcome to Dr. Bert Pitts.
Thank you very much. I am a clinical psychologist, as Debbie said, and I'm the founder and owner of Pitts & Associates. I also worked with a large practice in Homewood, Grayson & Associates, for 13 years, started my practice 10 years ago, and I started my career at Children's for 3 years after I graduated from graduate school. But I'm a Homewood boy, grew up right here on this very dirt, and went to Shades Cahaba and Homewood Middle School, Homewood High School, Birmingham Southern, and then eventually Baylor University, where I got my doctorate. And so, all right, I want to, I'm assuming, but correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a fairly good understanding of what attention deficit disorder is. I think you entitled this, you know, new trends in ADHD. So let me spend 5 or 6 minutes just covering the basics with ADHD. It is a neurological disorder. So now it is in my opinion overdiagnosed and over-medicated. But I don't want to give the wrong idea. We have many different medications for ADHD that can be very helpful. Now, when I say, first of all, when I say ADHD, which is the official name, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. That includes the types of attention deficit disorder that don't have hyperactivity. So we used to have it right, in my opinion. We called it ADD, Attention Deficit Disorder, with hyperactivity or without hyperactivity. That was DSM-3. DSM-4, if you just have the attention problems, now it's called Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, predominantly inattentive type. So, little inefficient in my book, but they didn't ask me what I thought. So, but it is a neurological disorder, and you can think of usually three clusters of symptoms are given. The attention deficit symptoms, which means a short span of attention, a weak focus of attention, you're not tuned in sharply, and then all the other problems that come from that. Difficulty listening, difficulty with remembering things, losing things, forgetting, but a lot of it is just not absorbing all of what's going on at the time, and I'll talk to you about that in a second. The second cluster of symptoms are the impulsivity or poor impulse control symptoms, and you can think of this as behavioral impulsivity. Stronger engine than brakes, you know, not being able to stop and think before you act. Then we have the physical hyperactivity symptoms. And remember, you can have just the attention deficit without the impulsivity or hyperactivity symptoms. I like to include a fourth cluster. I'm not the only one, but a fourth cluster of symptoms that often goes along with ADHD, which is emotional overreactivity and moodiness. So you've got hyperactivity in the behavioral realm, in the emotional realm, and even in the mental realm. That part of why we have an attention deficit is because our mind senses a problem in our midbrain. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second, where this comes from. And our mind is trying to compensate for the problem. So our mind is desperately trying to find something that's interesting because you know you can focus better when you're interested in something. And that's anybody. But here's the way it looks. Let's think about a non-ADHD group versus an ADHD group. If we go with the non-ADHD group, of course, they can pay attention better to the things they're interested in than the things they're not interested in. That's normal. And we've done many research studies with children, adolescents, and adults, and it looks like this. We'll start with the non-ADHD group. And when they're interested, this is the high level. Interested. And then there's a measurable difference statistically that when something is, when they're bored. Sorry, I'm not a very good writing on a board. Now, the ADHD group looks like this. You can pay attention just as well, sometimes better, if you're interested. Because people with ADHD can do something called hyper-focusing that is another compensatory attempt on the part of the brain. But when you go to something that's mundane and boring, the bottom falls out. You know, that makes a huge difference. Your brain is supposed to help you. Your brain can sense when things become less interesting for you out here, like out of your brain. When you're really interested in something, you lean into it, it's easy to pay attention to it. You love it, it's reinforcing. But when you have to sit through math class, you know, it's going, it gets hard. Very interesting study was done about 30 years ago. The first of this type of studies at the University of Montreal where they had 1,000 kids, fifth graders with ADHD, and 1,000 in a control group without ADHD. And the first thing they tested it on was a video game, and this was nothing like today's video game. This was almost like a Pong, you know, very simple, but at that time that was cool. And so they were going to be focused on that. And the reason I think they were fifth graders, of course in my day we did, in the fifth grade we learned long division. You know, I think they're learning that like in the third grade now or something, but anyway. So they gave both sets of kids, they gave them a small dose of Ritalin to see what would happen, because the old myth was that if you didn't have ADHD, taking a stimulant would not help you. That wasn't true. All the kids paid attention better on Ritalin. But when you're dealing with this much of a drop versus this much, and the medicine on average improved the attentional functioning about 70%. So about 70%, so it brought it back up that much, and about 70% brought it up about that much. Many physicians used to ask, they'd give people Ritalin, this was way back in the 70s, and they'd say, try some of this, you know, oh, so you can't focus, and you're a little restless sometimes, and sometimes you don't act before you think. And you know, those are very common symptoms for all of us on a bad day, or if we're tired. Well, try some of this, and if it helps, then you've got attention deficit disorder. But it's going to help everybody pay attention. You know, why do we all drink that warm black juice in the morning? You know, that's a stimulant too. And so Ritalin, Dexedrine, Adderall, Focalin, those are all stimulants. But I tell parents all the time, this much change is not worth, I mean, it's not right to put your child on medication. And you know, if you want to get your child from a B+ to an A-, that's but this amount of change can be life-changing. And this can mean the difference between years of low self-esteem, depression, closed doors, lost opportunities, and just the suffering of not feeling like you're able to get as much information out of life. So it needs to be a pervasive problem with not being able to pay attention at the very least, plus the other problems with impulsivity and hyperactivity. All right. Now let me give you some of the update to tell you kind of where the research is now. That research studies have shown that brains of people with ADHD show some minor differences, especially in the frontal lobes, where the frontal lobes govern impulse control, organization, and planning. A lot of what we call the executive skills in the brain. Another executive skill is working memory. It's like short-term memory, but it's more than just your memory. It only operates for a few seconds, but it allows you to hold information so that you can make some kind of decision unconsciously about how you're going to use that information. So that's called working memory. But one study showed that after correction for weight, IQ, and other factors, people with ADHD, their brain is 3 to 4% smaller than people without ADHD. Other studies have shown that people with ADHD have less gray matter in the frontal lobes, which is really not surprising. You know, these areas that have to do with organization and planning, there's just not as many neurons. That's what the gray matter is. Those are nerve cells. The nerve cells are like wires that carry pulses of electricity. They're like little power stations. God made in each nerve cell the ability to generate a pulse of electricity and to carry it down to the end and to pass it along to the next nerve cell. I'm not going to answer that call. Lastly, we find that people with ADHD, they have relatively low levels, high levels of the excitatory neurotransmitter glutamate, and relatively low levels of the inhibitory neurotransmitter GABA. I'm not going to test you on this, but all throughout the brain and body, we have a balance between excitatory processes and inhibitory processes. That you can think of the excitatory processes like the engine, and the inhibitory is like the brakes and the steering. Like, I'll give you an example. If I decided that I wanted to go shake Debbie's hand, my brain would send that impulse and the message down to my leg muscle so I could move over and hold up my hand. So that impulse was generated by my excitatory neurons. But what if I wanted to shake Debbie's hand, but I sprinted that way and busted your camera? You know, that. So if I want to go to shake Debbie's hand, I need to go that way. And also, I don't need to sprint, you know, because what if I went toward Debbie, but I flew across the table and ended up in Mike Hathorn's lap, you know? And we're friends, but, you know, still. So it makes sense that we would find too much of the excitatory neurotransmitter in the frontal lobe and not enough of the inhibitory. Because that's a lot of, like I said, it's behavioral hyperactivity, emotional hyperactivity, mental hyperactivity. There's way too much engine and not enough steering and brakes with ADHD. Heredity, we also know from research, is the major factor that contributes to the possibility that one will have ADHD. It's in your genes, like just about everything else. Heredity accounts for 60 to 70% of the variants. And that's a big chunk. There are other factors that we haven't fully teased out in research, but we know that if you have ADHD, the chance that a brother, sister, child, or parent is going to have it of yours is going to be as high as 1 out of 3. There's some studies that have shown much higher causality than that, like one well-controlled study of preschoolers with ADHD, those parents were 25 times as likely to have, at least one of the parents were 25 times as likely as the general populations. We're now getting to the point that we want to know exactly which genes are involved with ADHD, since we know there's such a big genetic causality. Found a region on chromosome 16, so you can impress people, you know, that we think it's on chromosome 16. And it's either one or probably more than one gene on that chromosome. Interestingly, other research has found genes for autism in the same region. But that really shouldn't surprise us, because there's a good deal of overlap between some of the symptoms of, like, Tourette's disorder, ADHD, autism spectrum disorders, and OCD as well, obsessive compulsive disorder. There's also preliminary evidence for common genes underlying a predisposition to ADHD and reading disabilities. So, several of these things, you know, the more that we understand the brain, the more that we'll be able to understand what's going on. Now, we can't give somebody a brain scan to diagnose it, because when I was talking before about the ADHD brain perhaps being slightly smaller, that's all within the normal range of variance. And so it's not anything that would stand out. Like, there are people without ADHD that some that would be smaller than that, but we're talking about averages. So, for many decades, questions have come up about stimulants and addiction risk. The reason that the questions come up, the stimulants, basically, of all the different medicines, they're all derived from either dexedrine or Ritalin. You know, you have the dexedrine side that has dexedrine, Adderall, Vyvanse, and a few other variants on those medicines. And then you have the Ritalin side that's Ritalin, Metadate, Concerta, and the Ritalin patch called Daytrana, which is an excellent medicine. It's just that insurance companies often don't pay for it because it's expensive. You have to, I have gotten a number of people to get their insurance company to pay for it, but what we have to do is we have to have the pediatrician try this kid or the adult on every stimulant made and show that it doesn't work as well as the patch. But what we're finding with a lot of medicines, not just this one, the skin is a much better regulator of something osmosing into the blood than the gut. Because when you eat something, it dissolves in the stomach and you have all that juice that goes right into the bloodstream. Now, long-acting medicines, you know, they have maybe half of the medicine with a thicker coating that wears off in about 4 hours so that then it gets released. But even that, you know, people's stomachs can have widely differing pHs. Some people have more stomach acid, duh, you know. And some people are just rapid metabolizers of what goes through their gut. As a result, the medicine doesn't last as long. Whereas skin is pretty much skin, you know. Everybody's skin, it's a much more even flow. And if you think of the skin greatly magnified, it has many layers, but you put on the patch and the medicine starts osmosing through the skin, and then it gets through the skin and it osmoses through a blood vessel right into the bloodstream. And then it keeps traveling through all day. And then when you take off the patch, you know, then the back edge of it moves through the skin, but it lasts. I mean, you don't have the peaks and valleys. I mean, it's a steady flow all day long. Vyvanse is one of the newer medicines that helps. Concerta is one of the ones that came out about 15 years ago. It's Ritalin. It creates a pretty steady flow through the day. And Vyvanse is one that's even more even, but it doesn't work for everybody. But I tell you what, the wave of the future is the patch. Now, the only thing about it is there's still Daytrana, which is the patch form of Ritalin, has been out for about 10 years. And they've changed the adhesive 3 times because they're really trying to make it where people with really sensitive skin, you know, it can leave a little bit of a red spot. Usually with kids that I've had that need to be on that, parents are happy to work around that. I mean, put some Vaseline on it or some lotion, and it's not a big deal. And, you know, just move it around the bum, it's not that much of a problem. But not many people get to use Daytrana, and I couldn't afford to pay for it out of pocket. So it's like $200 or $300 a month for a month worth of patches. But anyway, because stimulants, and don't let me scare you here, okay? These stimulants, actually, they are amphetamines. And they resemble cocaine in their mechanism of action. That really is just saying that chemically they get into the bloodstream and they do the same things, but, you know, a controlled dosage of Ritalin and you know, an uncontrolled dosage of cocaine, those are two very different things. But because stimulants resemble that, for decades we've worried about whether medical use can be addictive in itself, or raise the risk of addiction to other drugs or alcohol, in when you get into adolescence and adulthood. And luckily now we've been using Ritalin since the 70s, and we've been using Dexedrine since the early 60s. Dexedrine was actually created during World War II to help pilots that had to fly the long flights across the Pacific. On a four-prop plane, that would still be a 20-hour flight for some of those leaving California. or I don't know what it would be from Honolulu, but or Pearl Harbor, but anyway, it was a long flight. So we developed Dexedrine to help the pilots stay awake. We now have many long-term studies that show us that stimulant treatment of ADHD has not been found to raise the risk of addiction in human beings. It does raise the addiction in rats, but our nervous systems are different, and so it doesn't raise the rate of addiction potential in human beings. So, and that's many, many, many studies. There's research that shows that children with ADHD who did not take stimulants have twice the average rate of substance abuse. So, and that makes some sense when you think about it. When I was talking about that, you know, all the missed opportunities, the depression, the anxiety of having to function without being able to take in all the information. You can see how that might set somebody up for substance abuse. There are some problems with this research because there are some prior characteristics like socioeconomic class, for example, that might have raised the risk both for going untreated and for later drug problems. It's going to be hard to tell exactly who's, if there's risk, because it involves getting a group of people with ADHD, children, and giving one set a stimulant and giving the other set a placebo. And really that's considered unethical, you know, to not give somebody treatment for a problem. That's the only way you could truly know if there's a meaningful association that leads to addiction. But we don't think that's the case. And I'll tell you, I've been a psychologist for almost 26 years, with very well controlled medication use, you know, it's not a problem. Now, these are medicines that can be abused. So, they are amphetamines, and people can abuse amphetamines. But when they're used as directed, we do not see a problem with that. Vyvanse is actually one of the neat things about Vyvanse, because most of the time when young people or any age abuse stimulants, they crush it, and they crush it and snort it like cocaine. Or they boil it in a spoon and they shoot it into their veins. Pretty scary. But you can't do that with Vyvanse. They made it where you can't crush it. They coated the stimulant in Vyvanse is a lot like Adderall. But they coated the stimulant with a protein called lysine, and it's bound to the amphetamine molecules, and if you crush it, the lysine pulls the amphetamine molecules apart. So if you crush it, it becomes inert. It won't do anything. So that was pretty neat that they put an anti-abuse protection. But Vyvanse is also an excellent medication. There's another. How many people have heard of Intuniv? Kind of a cute name that some marketer came up with, you know. intunive. You can be in tune with intunive. So now intunive, if you've heard of the blood pressure medicine 10X, it's the same thing. It's guanfacine. But it's time-release guanfacine. And actually, Intunive has been one of the most successful non-stimulant medicines to come around. this is a medicine that impacts the adrenal system. If I describe to you, if you think about impulsivity, you know, it's kind of like, and distractibility, like, what? Squirrel, you know, and so you're being yanked. You're too attentive to anything. You don't have anything filtered. And God wired into us a protective system, the adrenal system, and you know, it's like, what? You know, and when we're being yanked here, there, our protective system stays very high because it's kind of like you don't know what's about to pop out of the bushes over here. So, and impulsivity too, you know, that there's some adrenaline in there when you know, often for risk-taking behavior, children or teens with ADD, so there's the adrenaline. The adrenal system stays constantly stirred up, and that's one of the reasons that very impulsive or hyperactive children, by the end of the day, sometimes they have dark circles under their eyes. I mean, they just can't slow down. They go from 100 miles an hour to asleep, and sometimes they don't sleep very well because. Your sleeping is going to mirror your neurological activity when you're sleeping is going to mirror your neurological activity when you're awake. And so if you're way too active when you're awake, you're going to be way too active usually when you're sleeping. So it can be devastating. But you can see now why this is something that calms down the adrenals. It kind of brings down the, without leaving you unprotected adrenaline-wise, it calms down some of the excess adrenaline. And you would expect that would help with impulsivity and hyperactivity. The amazing thing is it even helps with focusing. Because we had used 10X or guanfacine, regular guanfacine, for years. With kids, sometimes if you have, again, a highly hyperactive, impulsive kid, a stimulant is almost always going to help them focus better. It's not always going to help them with some of the disinhibited behaviors, you know, the impulsivity, the hyperactivity. So we often have to combine medicines. You know, we want a stimulant, usually. And then we might give the kid 10X, you know, three or even four times a day just to help them put on the brakes. And so we knew that 10X or guanfacine, which is in Intunive, helped with braking, but Intunive often is a standalone medication for ADHD. It's also an excellent medicine when combined with a stimulant that sometimes enables you to take less of the stimulant. And that's good. I mean, we like that. Whenever we don't forget that this is an amphetamine, and we like it when people can take less and get enough of a benefit. So I'm not going to talk much longer because I want to leave a lot of time for questions. There are also liquid forms of Adderall. It's called methylene oral. And there's a liquid form of Ritalin that's called Quillivant. And I've told you about Daytrana, the patch. You know, another neat thing in dealing with ADHD is the rise of digital devices and how much people with ADHD are leaning on these. I mean, there are apps for ADD. There are apps for kids. There's one that can that you know every couple of minutes it you can program in your name. It says, "Are you staying with your work?" You know, and so and it's really cool. But in terms of helping you efficiently to remember things. Mike wasn't at Homewood High School when I was a student there, but yeah. I actually have ADHD, and I'm treated for it. I didn't start to get treated for it until I became a psychologist. So I wasn't out of control, you know, but I was wiggly and pretty impulsive. Luckily, most of my impulsivity was off school grounds. I was basically a good kid. Thank heavens I had a guilty conscience and good child, good parenting. But there are many apps and people are using technology more. You know, I tell you, I just got an iPhone. I think I was the last American to have a BlackBerry. My daughters and wife made fun of me a lot. But boy, I would use the scheduling function all the time. I'd tell myself, don't forget about this. And that's the problem with ADHD. You know, you think about something, and it's if you don't write it down, it's gone. And so. I had a code that I would give myself for, you know, I need to think about that program coming up in 2 weeks that I have to do it, you know, at my church or at this school or whatever. I need to tell my wife, blah, blah, blah. She's the business manager at our practice. And so I would give myself a reminder to think about it, you know, and to think, not just think about it, but take it to the next level, do something about it. There are some very good magazines available. Have any of you ever seen Attention magazine? Or there's another one called Attitude that's spelled with ADDITUDE. They're both very good magazines. So we have some great publications now that have articles for adults and for parents. The bottom line is, while we do have many good medicines, it's important to get a good evaluation, which usually is going to be 2 or 3 sessions, in order to have the time for a thorough history, because many things can look like ADHD that are not ADHD. You know, again, these are not uncommon symptoms to be distractible. To be restless. There are many things that can cause that. A good evaluation that uses standardized checklists. The way we evaluated many other psychologists, we include a call to the teacher. Psychologists and licensed counselors diagnose ADHD without ever having talked to the teacher. You know, I mean, that's the most important one to talk to. Not only because that teacher sees the kid when they're in a situation where you need to focus the most of all, but also if you think about the norms, I mean, nobody knows what's normal for a fourth grader better than a fourth grade teacher. That's all that he or she deals with is fourth graders. You have a really exquisite sense of what stands out, what's different from the norm. All right. What time is it? Okay, I'm going to stop at this point, and we'll have some time for some questions. Do you want to say anything, Debbie, before we? Okay.
We'll stop right there. We're going to have a time of applause, and we'll have to cut them somehow there, so let's just give them a look.
Thank you.
So anyway, so let's just open up a time for